Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's for Women. Discover female health insurance through It's for Women.
Good morning, Dermot Whelan here, sitting in for Oliver one more time. It's Thursday, the 18th of September. I'm with you until 10. Love to hear from you today. Absolutely love getting your messages. You can let us know what you're thinking in the usual ways. Text 51551. You can WhatsApp us 0870 32 32 32, or you can send longer thoughts, whatever's on your mind. You can email them to oliver@rte.ie. Well, we have a great show for you this morning. I'm going to be talking to second captains Kieran Murphy. He has a wonderful new book out about what happens when an aging footballer, I hope he doesn't mind me calling him that, joins a hurling club and has to play Os Gaeilge. It's not easy to take on a new hobby in your 40s, especially hurling. It could be physically hard. It could be even a bit humiliating. We'll see how he got on when we chat to him in just a little while on the show. And root out those novelty cufflinks, lads. A little later on, we're going to be joined by Jerome Ingle Smith, who, having learned the trade from his grandmother, moved to London's Savile Row, don't you know, to fine-tune his tailoring skills. And now he's home and trying to reintroduce Ireland to bespoke tailoring. That's all on the way. But of course, when you think of neat appearance and sharp tailoring, only one man springs to mind: Bob Geldof. He's in the news today and is insisting he was never serious about running for president. He said it was just a story that got away from him after a flippant comment he made coming off stage at a festival. And I have to say, I'm disappointed. I think it would have made great copy, you know. I'd love to have heard all the interviews he would have done. He doesn't suffer fools, and he says what he thinks, that's for sure. Although I notice reassuringly he says he does cringe when he reads about himself in the papers. Like the rest of us who can't stand reading about ourselves or are listening back to ourselves. He says, I can't stand the stupid effing things I say. The reality of Sir Bob becoming president was that the idea was incredibly short-lived. It obviously lived in the news for days and days and days. But in Bob's own words, this is how it went down. He says, so Micheál called me and I said, what would you think about Bob Geldof being the candidate for the Fianna Fáil party? I think it would be great, Micheál said, but I've already chosen someone. I said, that's the end of the conversation. Thanks very much. And that was it. That was the entire thing. All of you who work in an office are now thinking, God, if only all meetings were that short, wouldn't life be better? If you're hoping to see Bob in the future, in the role, don't hold your breath, however, because asked if he would have any interest in going for it come the next election in 7 years' time, he replied bluntly, I'll be dead. So it's not going to happen. He is a very cool looking 73-year-old, it has to be said. Looking at the pictures of him in the papers today, still got that flat cap, he's got the long hair, the denim jackets, of course. He's still very much a rocker. But in true self-deprecating Bob fashion, he also says, I can't stand looking at my crap hair. at least you have it at 73. I think if you've got any hair going on at 73, it's a result. Speaking of hair, incidentally, there's something I was wondering about barbers. And maybe there is one of you barbers listening who could tell me. 51551. You know when they take out the mirror to show you the back of your head? The lads will know what I'm talking. You know, I mean, I guess they do it in hairdressers as well, do they? For ladies, they show you the back. Yeah. But you see, it's different. And I'm not sure if women are aware of the kinds of things that happen in the barber. But you know when they take the mirror out to show you the back of your head after they finish cutting your hair? I'm always amazed at the incredibly deft skill of every single barber in angling and moving the mirror in such a way that if you're, let's say, slightly thinner back there than you'd like to be, that part of your head is only visible for a flash and then it's gone. They seem to have a way of moving and angling that barber's mirror with a sleight of hand that most Las Vegas magicians would die for. And I always wonder, is that actually part of the barber training? Like, are you told as an apprentice, is this part of your curriculum? You know, are you told, for the love of God, don't show them their bald patch or they'll never come back to us? Is that how it works in barber training camp, in barber boot camp? Maybe you can let me know, because no matter what barber I go to, and I'm not particularly fussy, I go to lots of different barbers. Basically, the one that can see me quickest is the one I will choose. But I always notice there's just this level, high level of standard skill across the board in terms of how they maneuver that mirror when showing men the back of their heads. 51551 is the text, or 087-032-3232 if you're in the barber trade and you want to give us a state secret or two. As I was saying, I don't know if women are aware of the other kinds of things, maybe strange things that happen in barbers in general. The strange Turkish flame burning of ear hair. That's quite impressive. I've had it done, and it's enormously satisfying. I mean, there's an element of performance built in as they wave this flame dramatically around your head, and you hear the sound of the flame going whooshing, and you just hoping all the time that it's not actually the sound of your remaining hair melting off your head. You're just praying, please don't let this guy be hung over. Please don't let him have a naked flame and a load of regret. I'll tell you though, I have never had the wax lollipop treatment. There's a lot of people shifting awkwardly in their seats hearing that. But this is the slightly medieval treatment for nose hair in barbers, where basically, look, I'll be blunt about it, they shove literally a hot wax lollipop up your nose, then they distract you with a few questions about your holidays, and then when you're least expecting it, they reef the thing out in an eye-watering moment of sheer hair-removing panic. What's not to love? I've never done it, as I said, but when I heard about it, I thought, wouldn't it be great if they could actually just combine it with a COVID test? You know, it seems like a wasted opportunity, really. Medical grade nose hair removal lollipops. There you go, sir. Your nose hair is gone and you're negative for contagious viruses. Have a great day. Just an idea. Call me, AstraZeneca. I'm available for meetings. I think it's one of those poignant days in a man's life, though, isn't it? When you know your precious youth is beginning to fade before your very eyes. When your barber asks you that question, do you want your eyebrows trimmed? And you think, oh God, I'm now officially old. I'm now that crazy guy on public transport with eyebrows so big and hairy they need their own bus pass. It's game over, lads, when you hear that question. As you've heard on Morning Ireland and across the radio yesterday, we've been getting every detail of Donald Trump's state visit. In fact, there's a TV screen right in front of me here in the studio and getting the great pleasure of looking at his head right throughout the show. But yes, of course, the Trump visit to the UK is well and truly up and running. And we're getting all the details, but nearly every detail. What about the la-di-da food they're all eating? Because the elegance of Windsor Castle dining might be lost on Donald. Trump, of course, is famously a fan of fast food, according to his former campaign manager, Corey Lewandowski, in his book, Let Trump Be Trump. The businessman turned politician routinely ordered this particular meal from McDonald's. I wonder, would this be your choice? 2 Big Macs, 2 Filet-O-Fish sandwiches and a chocolate milkshake. I'm just surprised anybody was ordering Filet-O-Fish. I don't think I've ever met anyone in real life. you see it and you're like, nah. Like, that's definitely been sitting there a while. You know, there just hasn't been enough orders through to make me trust that choice. And of course, before being president, as a fast food fan, he even went out to bat for a couple of brands, including Pizza Hut.
Do you really think this is the right thing for us to be doing, Ivana?
What do your people think?
Let them talk.
Donald.
Ivana. It's wrong, isn't it?
But it feels so right.
Then it's a deal?
Yes, we eat our pizza the wrong way.
Crust first.
Introducing stuffed crust pizza from Pizza Hut. With a ring of cheese baked into a totally new, thinner crust, you'll want to eat it the wrong way. Crust first.
May I have the last slice?
Actually, you're only entitled to half.
Large, just $9.99.
You gotta love the Americans. I mean, they just find ways of getting more food into other food. You know, like as if there wasn't enough cheese on the pizza, they have to put it inside the pizza. But yes, that ad thoroughly reinforces the dignity of the office of President of the USA, doesn't it? So what did he eat in Windsor Castle, though? Was it all stodge, saturated fats and a free toy? Not quite. For Trump's visit, the 160 guests sitting behind 1,452 pieces of cutlery. Dear God, I'm surprised they could see each other across the table. They were eating from a menu written in French, which is weird for such an English institution, but I suppose everything just sounds posher in French, doesn't it? So here's the menu. Panna cotta de croissant et œufs de caille sur sable de parmesan, which is Hampshire watercress panna cotta with parmesan shortbread and quail egg salad. You would really have to be eating some form of quail if you were in Windsor Castle. A ballotine de poulet fermier en robe de courgette. Chicken. And a bombe glacée cardinal. Vanilla ice cream. Big slab of HB in front of them. It sounds rather posh for Mr. Trump, but who knows? Maybe they'll put it in a bucket for him. that list would be enough to give you a hunger, but apparently a Michelin star restaurant in England has started catering for people who wish they got less food on plates, not more. So you might have heard of Heston Blumenthal's restaurant. It's in Berkshire, called the Fat Duck. It usually makes the news because he comes up with all these weird and wonderful ideas. But this is possibly the weirdest I've heard. He's come up with a new menu tailored to reflect a growing demand for smaller portions driven by weight loss drugs. So people who are on the likes of Ozempic and that kind of thing, because their appetite is next to nothing, they still want to go dining, but obviously don't feel like all the food. They want to deliver the same flavour and theatre at the restaurant for less hungry guests who want reduced quantities. Now, Michelin restaurant portions are already famously small, so it's hard to imagine how tiny these plates could be. It'll just be a solitary pea on a side plate. Portion sizes apparently will be reduced by 20 to 30%, and in some cases by 50%. Thankfully, the prices will also be reduced at this place by £75. So £275 is what you'll pay for basically a pea on a plate. Although Heston is calling it a mindful experience, an apt name, in fairness, since there's no food to eat, you can just sit there thinking, why am I paying 275 quid for this one? But yeah, reduced food portions for people on weight loss medicine. Completely different story, but we hear a lot about air traffic controllers, and they tend to complain a lot, particularly in France. And a flight from Paris to the island of Corsica was in an odd situation earlier this week. It was left endlessly circling the airport when the pilot struggled to get a response from the air traffic control tower, which is pretty worrying. You know, when you've only got a certain amount of fuel and you're trying to get everybody down on the ground. Don't panic, it all turned out okay, but the flight did circle about for 20 minutes before they started planning a diversion to another airport on the island. Now, here's the clincher. The controller was working on his own in the tower and waiting for the flight, which was already an hour late. And sure, didn't the sleep just take him? He nodded off in the control tower. Eventually, the airport's ground fire crew took over trying to contact the controller and were the ones to find him snoozing on the job. You can just imagine it. Wake up, you crazy fool. There's a plane in the sky. Eventually, the airport's ground fire crew, yeah, they were the ones who got him. And the passengers are said to be taking it all in good humour, as was the pilot. We all could have died. But the aviation authority was understandably less cash about the whole thing. It's a shame, though, because it does happen. You know, when you're tired from work and you get into a cozy situation, sometimes you just can't help it. Here on the team, we were having a chat about it earlier, and apparently everybody here has fallen asleep in some weird place in work. Retail stockroom was one of them. Another one of us went for a little disco nap in the car and lost the best part of a day to it. And over the years, I have slept many a time over the years in the cozy comfort of under a radio studio desk. I mean, the rooms are soundproofed and everything. They're perfect. What do you think, though? Do you have a bit of sympathy for the controller? Has it happened to you? Have you ever had a secret sleeping cubby at work? Have you climbed under the traditional pile of coats at your work Christmas party for that disco nap? You could let us know. 51551. Vanessa Carlton, Thousand Miles. That song will always remind me of starting in radio. It was 2002, and I remember when I started, I was doing nights. That's what they put you on because you can't be trusted in the daytime. So I was doing nights. And for some strange reason, they insisted that I do traffic reports every hour at like 3 o'clock in the morning. Traffic's moving well on the M50, you think? Anyway, it's a lovely tune. And as I said, just one of those tunes that kind of makes you feel good. I was wondering about the deft skills of barbers and showing you the back of your head, but without showing you your thinning hair. And I wanted to know, was it part of the training? Gary is from Portland Barbers in Portlaoise. Hey, Gary.
Good morning. How are you?
Great. Dermot here. So what's the deal? Do you learn to kind of be delicate, you know, to be discreet when showing men the back of their heads in the barber?
Well, not in the old school days. When you'd done your old apprenticeship, you were basically presenting the haircut. You were showing off your work. You were showing off your kind of natural hairline, your natural taper.
Mm.
But you're also angling the mirror, so you were showing the side profile as well of the finished haircut, because there was lots of different haircuts, different tapers, so you're showing off to make sure the client was satisfied. Now, having said that, I think in the modern day, we are a little bit more mindful of people going thin and top. So it's not something that we're taught, but we something that we do definitely pick up on. We nobody wants to be sitting there looking at a helipad through a back mirror in the barbershop. So we are a little bit more mindful of it, of course, yes.
Well, look,
it's not something that we were drilled into.
On behalf of all men who may not be as hirsute in particular spaces, we thank you for all your hard work. How's business there today? Is it busy?
Yes, it's busy today, busy morning now. We have the Ploughing Championships down this direction, so we're getting a lot of the farmers coming in for a little tidy up before heading off to the ploughing.
Oh, you got to look your best when you're walking around the fields.
Yeah, absolutely. Your wellies looking sharp.
Good man. Thanks, Gary. Hi to everybody in Portland, barbers in Portlaoise today. Have a good one.
You too. Thank you. Good morning.
Good luck. Coming up in a couple of minutes, we're going to be speaking to second captains Kieran Murphy about learning to play hurling in his 40s. All Os Gaeilge, Fine Gaelin.